Welcome to Measuring Success Right, the official podcast of the Marriott Student Review, a podcast for students by students, where we connect the leaders of tomorrow with the issues of today.
You can choose to travel or you can choose to be rich. And my family considers travel and experience rich, and that is your richness.
Roma people come from a long line of strong women. A wise grandma would often say, "We come from a very long line of strong women who don't take nonsense." Welcome to Measuring Success Right. My name is Bon Lee, and I'm host for this episode. Today, we have the pleasure to talk to Emily Jones about the Roma people. Emily Jones is a journalism student minoring in creative writing, ballroom dance, Middle East studies, and global studies. She recently got married to Dakota in July. She comes from a Roma clan. You may know them as gypsies, but they prefer the term Rome, Roma, or travelers. So, Emily, can you tell us a little bit about this quote that your grandma would tell you?
Yes, she always says it to the grandchildren when we're feeling low, especially the girls, the daughters. My family has a history of women who don't take it lying down, if that makes sense. So many of the women in my family, my mom, my grandmother, my great-grandmother, my great-great-grandmother, they overcome these trials that I hear about. I'm like, that's insane. For example, my great-great-grandmother, back when we were traveling with horse and wagon, she gave birth to her baby in the wagon while it was moving. And yeah. And she was fine. She didn't need help. She didn't do anything. It was like her fifth child. And my family, we're very stubborn, very strong, very opinionated. We don't really take anything too lightly. We always stand up for ourselves. We stand up for our family, our friends, our loved ones. And I grew up with this example of these women who were so strong, who were so loud in what they needed, what they wanted, and how they felt, that I couldn't help but be the same way.
So, Emily, you said that you grew up traveling a lot. Which countries have you been to?
Oh, so been to, I can't say, but lived in. I have lived in the United States, Costa Rica, Italy, then Greece, France, Spain, Cyprus, and then back to the United States.
Wow, that's amazing. Okay, you also mentioned before that you speak 7 languages. Which languages do you speak and how did you learn them?
Okay, so my native language is Womani. It is the language of my people. It is it has origins in Sanskrit with romantic language roots. There's some Latin, there's some Sanskrit, and it is very similar to Portuguese. You can understand Portuguese very well, but not Spanish. Yes, so that is my native language. My father is American, so I speak English. I've been speaking English my whole life. All of my family speaks English as well, and when I lived in Italy and Greece, I never bothered to learn Italian, Greek, because English is what everyone speaks there. It goes Womani, my native language, English, my father's language, kind of also my native language. I grew up speaking that. Then I learned French in France, and Spanish in Spain. And then after that, I learned Arabic after living in Cyprus and having a lot of friends who were from Lebanon. After that, I learned Farsi. Those were both at school, Arabic and Farsi. I learned them at school. And then I learned American Sign Language because my husband speaks American Sign Language, and it is so useful. I use it everywhere. I get to talk to deaf people. It's one of my favorites. It's very unique.
That's so cool. So why did you move around so much?
So it's a custom in my family to be nomadic. My family is reformed, so we don't travel out of RVs, cars, wagons. We move in a big group. My ancestors were very persecuted by any host country that they were living in, and so moving became a necessity. And it eventually, necessity became a custom. And now here we are. It's my family. We can't stay in one place. At first when I was younger, I said, well, this sucks. I hate it. I have to leave all my friends. I have to start a new place, learn a new language, learn a new culture, learn a new custom, pack all my stuff, which I have a lot of stuff. And then as I got older and we came to the United States, we settled down in Utah for a few years. And I'm like, I've been here 4 years. It's too long. I'm itching. I need to get out. And it just, you spend your whole life traveling and it's part of your culture. It's part of your family. It's part of your identity. And you become an adult and you say, oh, this is what I need. I can't stay in one place. I don't want this for my children. I need to be out. I need to be seeing the world, experiencing, meeting new people, culturing myself. And honestly, I wouldn't have had it any other way.
I love that so much. So you talked a little bit about your people. So I was very surprised when I researched about the travelers. I realized that I literally didn't know anything about your people. The first thing I found out was that the official name for travelers are Roma people. I didn't even know what your people were called.
Yes, it's not widely publicized, but yes, that's the correct term.
Yeah. Can you tell us the brief history of the Roma people, especially your clan?
Yes. So the Roma people came out of India, and they started coming out of India. They traveled up into Europe. They had very dark skin. And because of their dark skin, different countries at different times, they would kill them, enslave them. They were put in concentration camps in World War II, along with the Jews, the homosexuals, and experimented on, killed. And so my people have known a very persecuted, hard life because of their identity, their skin color. My clan, we were not too far into family history, but we know the rough estimate of where everyone has been, and we know some names. I can name probably up into my great-great-great-grandmother, but beyond that, I don't know. But we know that our clan came out of India at some point, and we think that they spent a lot of time in Russia, and so because of that, we have lighter skin, and we have lighter skin and Russian features, and then they left Russia, and in the 1800s, they were living in Denmark, and Sweden, Norway, Finland. And then in the 1890s, my great-great-grandfather, he came out of Copenhagen to the United States for the first time. It was the first time our family had come to the United States. And there was a lot going on that we had people who stayed, people who came to the United States, and family who stayed well into World War II, cousins of cousins who were put into concentration camps. And but my family, personally, my direct lineage, came to America and have basically been bouncing back and forth between America and Europe ever since. It seems to be the trend is about 10 to 20 years in one country, 10 to 20 years in another continent. And Europe, United States, Europe, United States. My family loves America. They love the United States and Canada.
So you told us that your people were, like, enslaved and, like, persecuted a lot. It was something that came up over and over and over again when I did research about the Roma people. So can you tell us a little bit about that? Why is it not widely known?
That I cannot answer because, well, we're small people. There are about 1 million here in the United States. I want to say close to 5 million in Europe, I think. But we're a very small people. We're also very private. Because of all these hundreds of years of persecution, a lot of clans and people, they learn to hide their identity if they can and try to shake off Roma appearances and become reformed and do their best to fit into their host country. So because of that, I feel like it's not known because we are not known. And everybody knows the term gypsy. People use it very loosely. And the thing is with the word gypsy, you shouldn't say it because it's a slur. It's not like a slur that would be censored out in a movie, but it's a slur that is considered awkward and inappropriate. But that term follows us around, and everybody knows what that is, but nobody knows who the people are, what the customs are. It's sad, and the people, we've had a very difficult time. We've had a difficult time. Me personally, no. I've had trials, but they're not what they are in history. And so people would see dark skin, they'd see these strangers coming from out of town, these nomadic people, and they start blaming everything that happens in that town on the travelers that come in. And so someone's murdered. Oh, it was the gypsies, when really it was like someone's wife, you know? The bank gets robbed. It was the gypsies. And really it was someone who'd been waiting to have an opportune moment to rob a bank. And so things start stacking on, blaming. And when they come to the city, things start going wrong. But it's people taking advantage of having a scapegoat. And that, I feel like, is what a lot of my people are in history, a scapegoat. Blaming everything for this, diseases, even though one of the principles of our culture is cleanliness. People blame us for diseases, but we're very clean, very clean people.
Okay, yeah. So you said that so your ancestors came out of India, but then your clan specifically, they stayed in the Russia area for a very long time. So how do you recognize other clans? Because it seems like different clans stay in different areas for a long period of time, and they just don't have that same like characteristic you would find.
Exactly. And the problem is because we are a culture of travelers, of people conforming to host countries, people interbreeding with other cultures. There is no set culture. There is no set language. There are similar languages, but the culture and the language between Roma people in Europe and Roma people in South America, which there are quite a few, we cannot talk to each other. Because of all the time spent apart, there's no kingdom tying us down. One phrase that we use frequently is we are God's stars scattered in the sky. That defines the culture. There is so to recognize other people, it just comes up in conversation. That, or it's a cultural thing across the board for Roma people, is wearing money, finding interesting ways to wear money. And I'm not talking like a $100 bill on a string around your neck, like coins, having very opulent, decadent items, something that you can sell at any given time, like priceless jewels. You wear your wealth. And some people, they do that literally. They have coin necklaces. Some people I know sew their money into their clothes, and yeah, that's the one thing that we're able to identify. But other than that, it has to come up in conversation. Or in Italy, we could always tell who the Roma people were because the women are wearing platform heels, 8 inches high, neon green. Because to them in Italy, that's a sign of opulence, is 8-inch lime green platform heels and a tiny, tiny yellow dress.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
So, if it's not weird, what's your opulent object?
I have several pairs of Louis Vuitton red bottoms, and I bought them with my own money, even though I'm married into money, and I have a family that is more well off than we were when we first started growing up, but I work for my money, and so I bought a pair of red bottoms that were $1,800. And they're beautiful, and I love them. And I love clothes. I love to make clothes, wear clothes. I love to design clothes. And all my clothes, every day I get dressed, I think of it as an artistic expression. Because, like I said, we care about appearances. And that doesn't mean being beautiful all the time, but that means you put effort into how you look. And for some people, especially my people, a lot of my people are in poverty, and I was in poverty at one point. I was very poor most of my childhood, and so growing up, the more money I was able to acquire, the more I really wanted to put effort into the way that I looked, and so my clothes are like my symbol of that. Is every day I wake up, I put together my clothes like an art piece. I switch and I work on the flow and the way that things look, and I do my hair and my makeup, and that is my opulence. That is my show of wearing what you have, not hiding your success, hiding your riches, hiding who you are. What you see is what you get.
That's beautiful. I love that. Oh. And I am definitely one of those fangirls. Whenever you walk into class, I'm always like, you're so beautiful. I always say that every single day.
It makes my day because you appreciate it. Somebody appreciated it.
I'm very vocal about it. Okay, so are there any other like traditions like that in your clan or like in the Roma people that
yes
you guys follow?
So personal decoration, like I said, is a very big one. Ear piercings of any kind, but mostly ear piercings. You pierce your ears or your ear every time you overcome a mountain. I can't even tell you. I have had a lot of piercings, and I've changed my piercings. But every time you overcome a mountain, you pierce your ears. And so my family will have very pierced ears by the time that they're in their 80s. Very pierced. But ear piercings are a thing. Traveler tattoos are a thing. Those are very optional. I chose to get one because it was very beautiful. Traveler tattoos are a very big thing, but they're optional. I got one. It is a compass, and inside is an airplane because the airplane is the traveling, and also my father was an airline mechanic, so it felt like a very good blend of both worlds. And my cousins can get creative with their traveler's tattoos. I have one cousin who is, every time she goes to a new country, she gets passport stamps inked onto her body. She gets her passport stamped, and the next day she goes to a tattoo shop, wherever it is, and has them add it to her body. And that's how she does it. But the biggest custom for my people, and especially my family, is marriage. We have so many rules on marriage, and it's very particular. For example, the biggest one is you have to know each other for 4 seasons before you can even think about getting engaged. And I had a cousin who broke that, and she met a man on Tinder, and she was engaged to him 3 months later, got married 2 months later, and it did not fit the 4 seasons, and my grandmother refused to come to the wedding. Eventually, she did, and she did come, but for a long time, she was like, I'm not going, you violated that, and then she ended up kind of marrying a mongremor.
What's a mongremor?
A bad person. Let's just say that. He's a bad person. There's a reason why we have these rules, these traditions, because maybe if she had kept to the tradition, she wouldn't have married this person, and her life would have been a lot better. A lot of people will get married in their teens, not child marriage, just 17, 18. They'll marry other teenagers, they'll marry older. It just depends on what they want. Another thing is, as far as marriage goes, it has to be approved by the matriarch, and that is my grandmother and my mother. So my husband, he's very aware of how we are, and he's very conscious, but I also have an American father who expected to also be asked for my hand in marriage, and he asked my mother and not my father. My father was very offended. My father, it took him a long time to get over that my husband went to my mother and said, I would like to marry your daughter, and then a couple weeks later, I assumed he asked him. So I call my father and say, I'm engaged. And my dad says, what? But that was interesting. It's an interesting blend of cultures. But those are the really big things with marriage. Childbirth is considered the most sacred. Like, childbearing and childbirth is the most sacred thing that you can do as a woman. Because that means that you're strengthening your family, you're giving life, you are providing for someone, you're sacrificing your body in more ways than one to give to your family. And so women who are pregnant, who are bearing children, it is a very big deal. It's almost bigger than your wedding day is when you give birth. You have flowers, people bring you money and snacks, you come home and there's a ton of people in your house. You get home from the hospital and you say, I still have stitches. Can you get out and I can take a nap? And everybody's playing music and dancing. And we try to put an end to that because being around newborn babies with a bunch of people is bad, but people do it anyway. Yeah, those are the biggest customs I can think of.
That's amazing. Yeah, so going back to traveling a lot, you said that you lived in a lot of different European countries. Can you tell me what it was like?
Oh, yes, it is. Europe is beautiful. I spent most of my childhood in Italy and Greece, and I'm used to Mediterranean climates. I'm used to very invasive, friendly people, seafood, beauty all around me, ancient architecture. And I lived in Nicosia, Cyprus, for a while, and it was the most densely packed city I lived in up until that point, until I went to New York. But it was different, and there were so many people, and that was an experience within itself. Europe is just every slice of the pie is a different slice of flavor. Everything is like you go to Italy and Greece, and they're completely different. You go to Paris, and it's trash and horrible, and you never want to go there again. And you go to Barcelona, and it is very open and free, and my people are very accepted there because of a long history there in Spain, and it's very happy. And then you go to Cyprus, and Cyprus is very dark. It's sometimes very somber. It's very quiet at night and eerie, and I spent a good part of my preteens there, and I liked it. I felt like a nighttime owl there. And I'm not saying that it's a bad place, that it's dark actually, but it just, it's a different shade. It's a different flavor than the rest of Europe. And yeah, that's kind of what Europe was like.
That's beautiful. Can you tell me what were some of the stereotypes that people had in Europe?
Oh, yes. And I will say that for me, as a child, I was shielded by my family. They shielded me from a lot of the stereotypes, but I do know what it's like to walk into a restaurant and people, sometimes they just know. And they know you're not from here, you're not from America, you're not speaking any of our language, and it's not Russian. We know who you are, and they watch you. They watch you. Make sure you pay when you leave. They watch you. They have someone assigned to look at you in restaurants, especially if you come in a big family. They watch you. And we pay every time, and we tip every time in America, not in Europe. And people still look at us if they know. And if they don't know, we're fine. We skate by. But the stereotypes in Europe, sometimes I feel like it hasn't changed. We're still the scapegoats. We are still the outsiders. Yes, so the way that my family deals with these things is very head-on, very like, you can't say that to me, you can't say that to my child, you can't deny my child go to the school because of this, and they're very particular, and so that is why most of my cousins and I are American citizens. They come here, they give birth to children who are American citizens, because then no one can ever say, you don't belong here, you are not part of this. And the immigration process for the United States is impossible. It's ridiculous. And they make you answer these questions. And so I think my grandmother learned that the hard way. And she had all her children here. And so it's little adjustments that keep you protected from the outside world while keeping you in the outside world so that you learn, but you don't have to learn hard and fast.
Well, that was beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that. And just along with the theme of traveling a lot, so you mentioned before that sometimes it is hard for the Roma people to have traditional jobs because they move around a lot. So what does success look like for the Roma people?
As far as occupation, it's very popular to have a trade skill. Carpentry, my grandfather was a cobbler. He made shoes. We have women who are very talented seamstresses, and I wish that I had half the genetic to do that. But the key to traveling is having a job that you are indispensable anywhere you go. And the thing is with traveling, you can choose to travel or you can choose to be rich. And my family considers travel and experience rich, and that is your richness. But growing up, I was very poor. I was very poor. I starved many nights. We would lean on our family, but not enough to burden them. And my mother, she was a preschool teacher in some places. She tried to be a nurse. She tried a lot of things. But eventually, we settled down, and she went to school, and she became a speech-language pathologist. Because she's very gifted. She's very talented with languages. She doesn't have an accent in anything that she says. And she can take anyone and say, oh, you can't say this sound in your language? I will fix it for you. And so she went back to school and she did that for us. And suddenly our life turned around. And so that for success has always been an example for me. Education is a big thing. And taking matters into your own hands is a very big thing. And in order to feel like you're contributing to your family, you're not burdening them, you're doing everything that you can for them, success to my people means you are with your family, you are experienced, you have, there's a saying, and it is a very popular saying, very old saying, and it translates to walk the earth so that your feet know the ground. Should you walk there again, you know your way. And that raising your children, being yourself, raising yourself, knowing every inch of the earth, and at the end of your life, you know you have lived a good life when you have your feet have known every inch of the earth. And so for my family, for my mother, it means that you lived, you experienced, you touched everything you could have, and in the end, it didn't matter if you were rich or poor or beautiful, but you had a life that was meaningful, that touched others. And for me, what it means to be successful is to honor my family and honor what they gave to me. We're very close. My family is very close. And because we've never known a country. There's no country. Our family is our country. That is our patriotism. And so for me, honoring my family, staying close with them, following them wherever I go, wherever my grandmother says we're going next, I will go because they have given me a good life. And for me, I am here to learn a trade, to become useful in something that I feel that I can go anywhere and do. And my husband is very happy to come along. And for me, when I think of myself as a successful person, it is because I have been somewhere and I have changed it. And it is because I put all my work in. Like I said, I make all my own money. I don't spend my husband's money unless he wants to take me to dinner, which he does every night. And I don't need to work, but I do. I work very hard for what I have, and I'm not the kind of person who will drop out and quit trying and have no ambitions and lay around all day watching TV. I can't stand TV. I don't watch TV. I don't do Netflix. I don't do any of that. I tried it one time, and I felt horrible about myself. Even books, I struggle. I always have to be doing something. I have to be seeking something, creating something, making something. And I want to make things that I will be remembered for when I die. I want to write books. I want to write poetry, make art. One day I will learn how to paint. Right now I'm very bad at it. And I just want to create so many things and teach my children. I really want to teach my children. And to be a successful mother, I want to give them the same life that my mother gave me. And even when we were poor, when we could not afford to move, we were out every weekend. Everywhere. I've been all over the United States because my mother could not sit still. Even when she was teaching preschool, very poor, she'd take all of her money from the paycheck. She'd say, okay, we're leaving. You have never seen the Devil's Tower. We're going to the Devil's Tower. I saw the Devil's Tower when I was, 16. And yes, so that, for me, success is all of those things. I don't know if I can wrap that up into a coherent thought, but honoring my family, working for myself, creating things, and continuing these experiences that I have, to me, at the end of the day, that's a success to me.
That's beautiful. Do you feel like you're on the right path to success then?
No, not all the time. No, it's so hard to know. It's so hard to know, but God is watching me. He nudges me in directions. He nudged me towards my husband, who ended up being the best blessing, the perfect husband. And I just feel as if God is watching me, he will poke me to where I need to go. And in the meantime, I'll just stumble around in the dark and do my best, and I'll get there where I need to be.
Yeah. Okay, finally, what do you want the listeners to know more about the Roma people?
We're your neighbors. We're very cool. Get to know us. Ask us. We have a lot of cool stories. We have so many stories. I could tell you so many stories. But we're very friendly. If you're listening to this in Europe, stop being mean to us. We are a people. We exist. We are small in numbers, and we are different. But we are your neighbors, and you may not know that we are your neighbors. And really get to know people, talk to them. We can teach you how to dance very well. we can give you stories. If you ever need childcare, if it's an emergency, so many people, my family are not just children dropped off on the doorstep. Oh, my wife is in labor. Here are my kids. And they know we'll take good care of them. We're good people. We are very like the LDS faith, where you can come to us, and because we know what it's like to have a small family, to be very close-knit, we know if you need something from us and you ask us for something, that you need it. And we're here to experience you. We're here to experience everyone, and we want to experience you. We want to get to know you. We want to be your friend and tell your story 10 years from now, and collect pieces of you that we bring with us along the way. My favorite song still to this day is a song that was taught to me by my Lebanese friend in Cyprus, and she is not, I haven't talked to her in 10 years, but that song is a piece of me and always will be. And you want to be part of us. You really do, because your story lives on, and it's carried to all corners of the earth.
That was so beautiful. Emily, thank you so much for joining us today. Thanks for listening. This is Bon Lee with Measuring Success Right. Have a wonderful week.
Make sure you subscribe to our podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or SoundCloud so you never miss an episode. Be a friend and tell a friend about Measuring Success Right.
This podcast is a project of the Marriott Student Review at Brigham Young University. You can find us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Marriott Student Review, or online at marriottstudentreview.org.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast do not necessarily reflect official policy or position of Brigham Young University or The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.